Right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Daniel Smith. You won't hear much from me because I'm here just to introduce Alan and then maybe facilitate some questions at the end, or maybe stop Alan from talking when he runs over time. So for those of you who don't know, Alan Clayton is an independent research consultant working primarily in the accident, comp and injury prevention areas. He's also an adjunct associate professor at Monash Uni, associated with ISCA, holds a number of other appointments, an honorary associate at both the Centre for Employment and Labour Relations Law at the University of Melbourne and the National Research Centre for Occupational Health and Safety Regulation at ANU. He's the Australasian representative for the International Disability Standards Management Council, which is the leading international body in the area of program standards and professional certification in disability management. Alan's got over 3 decades of experience in the development of review of accident compensation schemes, formerly the manager of policy and research in the Victorian Work Cover Authority and executive officer to the heads of workers' comp. He's currently assisting, and I'm just going to say the Indonesian Work Social Insurance Regulator because I can't pronounce that. I'm sure you'll explain what it is and pronounce it properly. In developing a return to work focused workers' compensation system for Indonesia. So please welcome Alan.
Thanks, Dan, and for that invitation. That's obviously the high point. I think I'll sit down now. It's going to be downhill from there. I've been privileged to have a very interesting gig. The Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade approached me as to whether I would assist the Indonesian government in developing a new work injury social insurance scheme. Now, Indonesia we largely know as one of the developing economic tigers, and you can see from that slide as the projected development from the 16th largest economy in the world to 2030, the seventh largest. The middle class consumption, and we see with their exports of beef, which can be sometimes rocky with our developing middle class, the population and the production of GDP in the cities. And if you've ever been to Jakarta and tried to travel on their roads, you'll see the development of gridlock, and heaven help us when those motorcycles and mopeds convert to cars, you won't be able to get anywhere. So there's other statistics there of it being a developing economy. Another side, though, and I was able to work quite closely. The Vice President's office in Indonesia has a poverty reduction program, and some of the work they have done have shown the concept of dynamic poverty. We sometimes think that you raise somebody out of poverty, they stay there, and you bring the next cohort forward. What they found in taking 2009, that 14.7 million people were raised out of poverty, but 13.2 million fell back. So the net gain was only 1.5 million. So that degree of precariousness in the nature of employment income support is a not unimportant issue when you're coming to do design. The Indonesian population of around about 252 million, the working age population of 125 million, 118 million in the workforce and 7 million unemployed, a small percentage of that work in what we would regard as contract of employment. There is a huge informal sector of various arrangements. And when you come to their social insurance arrangements, there's a huge gap between what's formally covered under the law and what's covered in practice. In fact, the most generous estimate is that only 19% of the working population actually have formal coverage. So, and there's very high levels of underreporting. So this is the International Labour Organization's World Social Protection Report for 2014-15. And you can see that formerly there's about 30% in Indonesia, which is there with the hashed in country name. There's about 30% under mandatory coverage, 40% under voluntary coverage. But the formal, the actual amount is somewhere between 12 and 19%. Come to one of the things I did when I went there was to try and gather what was actually happening under the old system. So they have about 103,000 reported claims. What I did was put a template of WorkCover New South Wales, which has a workforce of 3.2 million and around over 120,000 reported claims. So the degree of underreporting is of various dimensions. And that doesn't mean that there is some degree of structural difference among the Indonesian population. This is a study in the 2013 American Journal of Occupational Medicine, which took a range of comparative employments. And what Widnarko and his associates did was look at workers in Indonesian coal mining sector. So the first one there, going from the left, is in fact white-collar workers. The second one is the combination of white and blue-collar workers, and the third one is of blue-collar workers there. And you can see that the incidence of low back symptoms is only exceeded by Greek forestry workers on that survey. So the background to the social insurance. Indonesia gained independence in 1945, quite a radical movement, and huge aspirational values. So Article 34 of the 1945 Constitution said the state provides social security system for all citizens and empowers the people who are weak and incapable in accordance with human dignity. This is repeated in subsequent laws and enactments. The 1992 Employee Social Security Act, which is the start of the provision of social insurance in Indonesia. It gathered pace with the 2004 law, the National Social Security System, which started the planning, which culminated in the 2011 Act, which established the two major administering bodies, the BPJS Kesehatan for health and the BPJS Ketenagakerjaan, which I will just say BPJS employment, as the body for the social insurance. So the situation with health insurance, the privileged groups in Indonesian society beforehand tended to be the civil service, the police and the army. So PT Askes was the health insurance fund for civil servants. Jamstek was for larger private sector employers working under conventional employment contracts. ASABRI is the military scheme, and Jamkismas was the type of default safety net fund for those extremely poor and disabled, a very primitive system. So from the 1st of January 2014, that all moved to BJS Kesehatan, and it will, over time, assume the responsibilities for other groups, and so it will be the sole insurer, the sole provider for health benefits from the 1st of January 2019. In relation to work injury, prior to and the new scheme, which I've been involved with, came into effect on the 1st of July this year. So there's not much data and the like in its operations, but it absorbed Gemistech, which is the private sector conventional employment, Tuspen, which is the scheme for 4.5 million civil servants, and Asabri, which is for 835,000 police and military. So those schemes will continue in existence and under the present timetable until 2029, when they'll all be moved into the BPJS employment. So just a quick overview of the benefits in the new scheme. And I should say these are in rupiah, and the exchange rate, I think, at Bound is about 9,775, but it's hovered around. If you want to do a real quick conversion, take 10,000 rupiah to the Australian dollar. So funeral expenses to a maximum of 3 million rupiah. A lump sum payment, so if you take 80 times the monthly wage, 60% of that is the lump sum, and there is a type of floor, which is in the non-employment social insurance area. So they've taken that if that calculation comes below 16.2 million rupiah, you get the 16.2, so it's a floor under that. There are periodic payments of 24 times 200,000 rupiah, which comes to 4.8 million rupiah. And for each child, there's an educational scholarship of 12 million rupiah. Indonesia being highly dispersed, it's often difficult to get people to treatment, hospital and the like. So there's transportation benefit, which varies by the mode of transport, by land, which includes no rivers and lakes. It's 1 million rupiah is the maximum there, by sea 1.5 million rupiah, and by air maximum 2.5 million rupiah. Under the previous arrangements, the cost of medical and hospital treatment was capped at 20 million rupiah. It's now uncapped, and I'll come back to some things that might flow from that. Similarly, rehabilitation costs were formerly capped at 2 million rupiah, now potentially unlimited. For loss of earnings for the first 6 months, there's 100% wage replacement, next 6 months, 75%, and thereafter 50% until either return of work or an exit through taking the permanent impairment benefit. And the lump sum permanent impairment benefit, they have, and there's a huge scramble at the end to try and get all the regulations through. So a day before the scheme was to come through, they got the regulation which had the disability tables, which are a type of variant of the AMA guides, and the disability impairment benefit is a percentage of impairment multiplied times 80 times the monthly age. And the maximum there is 70% of 80 times the monthly age. Two novel elements of the scheme, which you don't find elsewhere. As I say, we're dealing with often very, economically marginalized people where, having food on the table week to week can be an issue, and also having a roof over your head. So what the BPJS has done has entered into arrangements with retailers and banks to basically provide a food bank, which can provide a food benefit where it's judged that that is needed. And similarly, they've entered three developments at the moment with government agencies, banks and developers to develop affordable housing. So this is a type of social housing project through the workers' compensation scheme, as we would have it. And I put the three developments that are on on the books at the moment. In terms of premiums, there is a ascribed risk category of five risk categories, and I won't read those out. You can see there. And so the type of industry category is ascribed to one of those categories and receives that as the premiums, the percentage of the monthly wage in relation to those. The return to work model, its real origins come back to around about 2011, 2012. But it's interesting, and that's why I'm saying that there has been a development of Indonesian engagement with Australian providers and other providers, and they're very interested in partnering with various providers here. So the old Commonwealth Rehabilitation Service, CRS Australia, in the late 1980s had a reasonably limited involvement with the Indonesians. Their much greater involvement was with the social security arrangements that developed in Malaysia under SOCSO, and that loop, and I'll mention briefly, has flowed back because one of the major models the Indonesians have used is, in fact, the SOCSO Malaysian model. But they've also partnered very strongly with the DGUV, the Deutsche Gesetzliche Unfallversicherung in Germany, which is the German work injury scheme, and with NIDMAR and the International Disability Management Standards Council. And so the various case managers, most of them have gone for training in Germany or in Canada, with either DGUV or with NIDMA. In 2013, there were two pilot trials in conjunction with the Ministry of Manpower and the Ministry of Health. These were largely foreign multinationals who agreed to opt in and provide the pilot trial. What they found was that the medical rehab was good, but the return to work was very ordinary. And they, through the work with the DGUV, decided that they actually needed some type of multidisciplinary team and a much greater return to work focus in the scheme. So the pilot programs have 63 case managers, and these multidisciplinary teams, that's going to be ramped up in the number of case managers and rolled out on a national basis over 2016. So that's the type of, that's their rollout program. And as I said, if you think of the influence of SOCSO, they were slightly amiffed when I produced from the SOCSO annual reports that that was the SOCSO rollout program. There are strong similarities between the two. So the elements of the rollout, there's 68 case managers in 2015. They're adding that in the course of this year, and then it will be rolled out in 2016 on a national basis. They decided they would add job placement officers in 2016 and then assistant case managers to be added in 2018. And when I sat down with them, I said, well, if you're actually wanting to pilot a scheme, why don't you have all the elements of it in the pilot? So why are you adding the job placement officers in 2016 and the assistant case managers? Wouldn't be much more sensible if you're really wanting to road test the pilot to have all the elements of what you're wanting to have in the team and do it during your pilot process. So they did nod their heads and say, yes, okay, Alan, we'll make those changes. In relation to decision making, basically the normal decisions will be made by the case managers, which will be in the major BPJS offices, and you can see them there. So the 11 regional offices and the larger ones of the branch offices is where that case manager decision making will be made. And then the area where they regard there'll be some contention is to the nature of, you know, prostheses and equipment and devices. So those decisions will be made at one of the 11 state offices, and complex, difficult issues will be escalated to the head office in Jakarta. Now, the one thing you realise in Indonesia is the complexity of the bureaucracy. There are 23 ministries, and it's a bit like a magnet, or two magnets together. The two polar areas are the Ministry of Finance, which tends to have no World Bank backing and pursues a fairly dry economic agenda. At the other end, there is what's Bappenas, which is the Ministry of Planning, which it has a much more socially progressive agenda. And there are 23 ministries which sit around in various parts of the orbit between those polar ministries. So the return to work program under this scheme has been included as a national social protection strategy under the National Master Plan for the Acceleration and Expansion of Poverty Reduction, generally known as MP3K1. The expectation is to achieve a workplace reintegration of around about, that's the target, is 2,740 workers a year. But when you take the case managers, it's probably not a huge stretch. It works at about 40 people per case manager per year. But the situation will get a little bit more complex as of. So in terms of working with the BPJS, some of the areas of what I identified as possible pressure points are the uncapped nature of medical and rehabilitation costs. And when I was there, there was the prison Jakawi was formerly the mayor of Solo and formerly the mayor of Jakarta, of a progressive inclination, but it does not have a large independent support base. So he's somewhat dependent on Megawati and has to negotiate through that. But when he was mayor of Jakarta, he introduced the Health Jakarta card in 2013, which was hugely popular, and the institutional capacity proved incapable of dealing with the demand. So within a few months, there was a 70% increase in utilisation of Jakarta hospitals. So one of the issues is flagged where you have uncapped medical and prosthetic and other device entitlement as to how that will be managed. So there's nothing like the reasonable costs that are reasonably incurred that we have in Australian workers' compensation arrangements. As well, there's the Constitutional Court, which is a very powerful institution in Indonesia, in interpreting Article 15.1 of the 2011 law. It said that if your employer doesn't enroll you into Social Security, you can self-enroll, which is a reasonable enough decision. But given the dynamics within the Indonesian corporate sector, there's likely to be a considerable knock-on, flow-on effect from that. And there's also the question of supply-side issues. There are very few occupational physicians and work injury specialists. When SOCSO started its development of a similar type scheme in 2007, there were 25 occupational physicians in the entire Malaysia. I don't know what the Indonesian figures are, but it's a very small pool. So there are considerable supply side issues. And the real elephant in the room will be the integration of the informal sector. There is, which is the vast majority of the work employment in Indonesia. There are provisions in the legislation that informal workers can opt in to the scheme. They will pay 1% for the go back to the ones under the blue, the work injury scheme. They can opt in for a 1% contribution. For the death payments, are 0.8% of income as the contribution to opt into that scheme. And I think that's probably about where I can leave it to questions.
Thank you. Okay, so it's over to you now for questions. There's a microphone there. The session's being recorded, so if you can speak into that and your name and organisation, please, and who wants to be first?
Alan, Brad Parker from WorkSafe Tasmania. You spoke about the shift from the Indonesians to the SOCSO and Malaysian type yep. model, and given that Australia's a close relationship, they obviously didn't want to pick up on any of our systems. And, you know, the NIDMA, and the other, the German model you were talking about. What do you think the learnings are for Australia in your work in that space?
Well, I think, you know, while we might think we're the center of the universe, we're actually in a minority of schemes. If you look about schemes around the world, most of them are on a social insurance model. So that there is employer-employee, at times government contribution. The usual exception is in the employment area where it's for a period of time a employer contribution. So if you look at Europe, so it's probably natural that they would look to probably the premier work injury social insurance scheme, which arguably be Germany or the Caisse Régionale Assurance Maladie in France or those type of arrangements. So there is a degree of that. Malaysia moved from a type of workers' compensation approach to a social insurance model, and SOCSO being the closest neighbour, I think it was probably inevitable that in looking for a social insurance template model, they'd look just closely to the north and see SOCSO. And this has been a huge degree of cooperation with the BPJS employment and SOCSO. I was there in August, and the Director General of SOCSO was there and others. SOCSO, it has taken up the International Disability Management Standards Council training and the audit tool. And if anyone was at the International Forum on Disability Management in Melbourne last year, the next IFDM conference will be in Kuala Lumpur and managed by and run by SOCSO, who are very keen to show off their newly minted rehabilitation centre. And so I think the learnings are that, in fact, the Anglophonic countries are very much in a minority in terms of developing insurance model rather than a social insurance model, and therefore when developing a social insurance scheme, they were looking to existing social insurance models. Having said that, they are very interested in looking to Australia for assistance in the techniques of medical rehabilitation for return to work management and the like. So there is a strong degree of interest in a technical sense, but in terms of an overall framework, the fact that the social insurance model, I think, preordained where they would be looking as exemplars.
So we've got a few minutes for questions, if anyone else has got anything for Alan. Or you're just hungry and you want lunch early, you want to avoid the queue.
That's right. Thank you.
So really, it's Natasha Anning from EY. On a more interested basis, is the government actually implementing a system so that they can manage the case on an IT system?
I'm afraid I'm not au fait with their IT system. I'm sorry, that was
I was just interested. I had a little bit of experience in Indonesia and everything's paper-based, so I was just wondering if they were using power of data to manage that.
Well, what I can say is that what they have done is that Indonesia, they have been the first agency to use a national ID card as a basically a swipe measure in accessing services, and they are looking very strongly to electronic lodgement of claims. So the actual configuration of the IT system that there was beyond my brief, and I'm sorry I can't.
No, that's more my question, I think, is that it is being supported by
absolutely
the data and the technology that absolutely we have available.
And I have to say that within the BPJS employment, they're led by a very charismatic vice president and has a very enthusiastic, engaged group of young professionals in doing that. And they seem very committed to producing the best possible arrangement. And they are very strong on it being insulated from corruption. There's a very strong anti-corruption focus within that rollout and thing. And so it's a question of how high you place your expectations. But I think that given the constraints, I am very pleasantly driven by what has been done, the commitment, the planning, we had some. I mean, I was basically locked in 10 and 12 hour discussions with it, and the give and take was, given my scanty Bahasa, but with very good interpreting, there was some very good and strong give and take in design elements.
Thank you.
Anyone else? going, going, gone. Okay, well, it's time for me to pass a bottle of wine over to Alan, which he'll share with us all over lunch. And while I do so, if you can please thank him for his talk. Thanks, Alan.